Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border, did I say border, of liberty and prosperity? This is Safety Wars. We're waiting for all the streams to kick in here. I am broadcasting live on Safety FM. Video stream is a little bit behind if you're on it, but that's okay. You may not be broadcasting live on video. That's okay too, because we will release it later on. We got a very special program tonight. Now, you got all this equipment. QG connection, you got fiber optic, you got this, you got that. Still slow. Imagine doing this on dial-up, because people used to do these programs way back in the day. I remember with the old political programs. You know, all those political programs were doing everything by dial-up. Okay, so we're going to start this again. Welcome to Safety Wars for Thursday, September 12th, 2024. We got one hell of a show for you tonight. Get ready, and you're going to mark this down. I got the Safety Shock Jock title on a video screen here. Basically, we are talking about September 11th. I know. But it's September 12th, Jim. That's okay. I have a problem here doing what we do here, talking about stuff on September 11th. I do. I mean, what else? No, it's a constant... And it should be, by the way. It absolutely needs to be. It's constant talking about September 11th every September 11th, especially here in the New York area. And I'm sure it's the same thing in Washington, D.C., that area, and Shanksville, Pennsylvania. I'm sure it's the same there, too, where, no, it's, and it's very emotional. And no, I don't want to break down on the air with this. However, we're going to talk tonight. The title of the program is The Cost of Being Ignored. That's what it is. So early this morning, one of our colleagues and one of our listeners out there, David Olcott. I've known Dave. Dave is very young, right? As a lot younger than me. But Dave has been in the safety business longer than I have been, and I'm 32 years. I'm in the business. He is, you know, you can look him up on LinkedIn. I don't know if he's okay with me sharing his employer, but rest assured, he has, you know. Now, when he was going for his credentials, it was like, Jim, I'm hoping that they do the blah, blah, blah. No, you have to have references and everything. I said, Dave, you know everybody. You've been in this longer than I have. You have more experience than I am. And you're, why? Because his father was a co-owner with Bob Kredvick's, Jeffrey Olcott was Dave's father's name. They owned a company called Envirogenics back in the day. And, you know, there's a history there, you know, the company, you know, the partners split, that sort of thing. But, you know, and both went their separate ways, and both were very successful afterwards, right? They were successful together and successful afterwards. And what ended up happening was Dave put on a LinkedIn post, and I did receive permission from Dave to share this on the air. And I commented on this I commented on this with this. I shared it on my profile. Jim Poesel, P as in Peter, O E S as in Sam, L as in Larry, just like it says on the screen. Dave's brother Jeff also shared this. I don't know about his other family members. 23 years ago, Dad went to work for the last time as a man I used to know. Before, our lives changed forever. We didn't lose him physically, but we lost him mentally and emotionally. 9/11/2001 would be the beginning of the end for this great man who suffered from and ultimately succumbed to PTSD in the years that would follow. And he includes a photo of Jeff. This is a photo of Dad with a bunch of FDNY firefighters and EMTs that he spent weeks with on top of the rubble piles, and who became friends of his. He was proud of what he did on 9/11 and the weeks and months following, but it destroyed him. Hashtag never forget him, the first responders, those thousands of lives lost forever, or the families and friends that live with only a memory now. I'm going to include the hashtags here. Hashtag mental health. Hashtag mental health matters. Hashtag break the stigma. Hashtag you matter. And hashtag be kind. And there are many different comments here. And I said, you know, I'm thinking on the way in to work, I had read this before I left work. This left for work this morning to one of my projects. And I had, I said, you know, I got to really respond to this because I'm not aware if Dave knows or his family knows some of the a little bit more context that Jeff had shared with me after 9/11 here. But this is true. I mean, like, oftentimes I share stories. I leave out names. I leave out companies. I might change the things a little bit just so we could don't necessarily identify people. But everything I share is true here. And if it's a parody, you know it's a parody or anything. But this is absolutely true and very serious here. I thought it was important that we add some context here. Jeff was one of three safety people I, Jimmy, personally knew who spoke to EPA Administrator Christine Todd Whitman about the dangers of the World Trade Center dust in the first week after 9/11. So this happened on a Tuesday, as I recall, and he had been there Tuesday afternoon with a truckload of stuff, PPE, over, and they were staging over at the Liberty State Park. If you're not from the area, that is right behind the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island in Jersey City. That was one of the staging areas. So they had spoken to Christine Todd Whitman, who was at the time the administrator of the EPA, and several other officials. All three people, and I do know the other, so three people I know spoke, all three people were ignored because the official policy in the United States was to get people back working, and there were other political considerations. Had the emergency managers, who no doubt had the same experience and similar credentials as Jeff, trusted established science and practices, we likely would have had many fewer long-term deaths. A lot of suffering needlessly. We had this conversation, Jeff and I, before his death, and the fact that people were ignored, and this led to so much more suffering than was necessary, and it's also led to, in part, his PTSD. He was having issues. We didn't talk about it 23 years ago like we do today, right? But I would label it as PTSD. Some would label it as terrorism stress syndrome. It's been labeled also with that. That was another friend of the program, Dr. Carol Lieberman. I don't know if she's still on the air, but I've spoken to her a couple of times on this. I could go on and on with implications of what happened being felt today and many related issues, including COVID-19 policy. I did not on LinkedIn, but I'm going to say it right now. The cost of being ignored. How many of us as safety professionals have been ignored? And it leads to bad consequences. Think about it. What leads to horrible consequences. We're in a workplace, we see a hazard, right? Causes maybe chemical exposure. By the way, we do know that there's about 50,000 people a year die from chemical exposures in the workplace and are not really recorded. They're going off of models. That's not my numbers. Those are the OSHA's numbers. 50,000. Another 5,000, give or take, are from our regular OSHA 300 log reports. So that's like one Vietnam War every year because of industrial hygiene exposures. Think about it. All right? Not my numbers, their numbers. How many times do you see someone without a respirator on when they should be wearing a respirator? Or maybe they're wearing it improperly. How many times do we have construction managers, environmental managers, healthcare managers? Maybe you work in a hospital. You bring a safety issue to you. You're a safety professional, or at least someone who's concerned about safety. And what happens? They ignore you. Oh, it's not that bad. Oh, come on, you're making a big deal over this. Blah, 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 blah. And it gets ignored. There's a price to that. The first time I presented in one of my signature presentations is pushback strategies faced by health and safety professionals. I presented it at Rutgers for the outreach training. Right, we have to be recertified. And by the way, next week I'm being recertified, Texas A&M, for general industry outreach training. So I don't know if I'll be here live, but I intend to be here. Essentially, we go and we get ignored. Here, I gave this speech, and let me get back. And there was I had one person weeping. I had one person say he's wounded by the career choice he made in safety because we get ignored. Here we have them ignoring, and then there is a solution to this. We're going to get to it at the end, unless I go off the rails here. We get ignored, majority of us. If you're working in a working environment, we're not ignored. Pray to what God you believe in and thank him or her. All right. So what did we end up from people being ignored on that day about how bad the air was? And this is 1 week after, right, like Monday, finally, when things calmed down, right? They were able to sit down and regroup. And it was obviously no longer a rescue operation. It was a recovery operation. But they were, again, anybody knew that, well, we got to keep up hope for the American public. We got to, rather than be honest with them, right? Now, you're going to say, well, Jim, contacts, and I had one person get pissed off at me one time talking about you weren't there. Well, okay, great, I wasn't there. And you're playing Monday morning quarterback and all these biases. I said, any first-year safety professional who's ever collected an air sample knows this. If you took 40-hour Hazwoper training, you know this. I remember back in the day, this was all done in person. It wasn't done online where you could sit back and sleep. Everyone knew this. And guess what? They were ignored. So there's a, right, with that. How many people died on 9/11? 2,977 souls died. We talk about them. Some estimates on the people who died after 9/11 for this, and their numbers are literally all over the place. It's almost like, it's like it reminds me of, and we talked about it on this program in February 2021. Right, when we had imaging salva, the numbers are all, this is like the Soviet Union and a number of people that died in the concentration camps over there during World War II, including 13 of my family. The numbers are all over the place. Right, here, one number I heard, 10,000 people by 2018. One of the more current numbers says 4,343 people died. from the 9/11 related cancers. All right, a couple years ago, they said, well, it's over 3,000. I got it written here. Again, ignored. Now, let's put this into context. You're a highly credentialed, highly experienced safety professional. Graduated with honors from a master's program in toxicology, I believe it was. I might be wrong. Might have been occupational safety and health from Quinnipiac University, right up here in Massachusetts. Connecticut. All right. Certified industrial hygienist. Registered environmental manager. Brilliant guy. By all accounts, and my experience, brilliant. All right? Explains this, and unlike me, he explained things very bluntly and succinctly. He was like Jay Allen. Very bluntly and succinctly and effectively. Extremely effective communicator. And he gets ignored. Then people start dying afterwards. 9/11 related cancers. Right? Basically, now all these chemicals, now I forget the number exactly, way over 1,000, maybe closer to 2,000 chemicals in the smoke and the dust and the asbestos and the concrete dust and the lime in there and everything else that goes into that. That now we have a very low exposure limit for right now, today, in the last several years. Curing in your lungs, irritating your lungs. People, all different kinds of breathing issues. You get Congress in there saying, well, nobody should get covered by this. Tough luck. A lot of senators and congressmen, not from the New York area. They wanted this to go along with, but a bill eventually was passed. Droga. Act, there can they have coverage up to 2090 if you can prove that you got it from that. So you have to apply for it, and you got to wait. And by the way, if it's anything like the VA, right, Veterans Administration, what I had to go through with a family member this year, they're playing the waiting game. Who's going to either die or who's going to go and who's going to die? First, then we don't have to worry about this anymore, or maybe they're just going to go away. How many government programs are like that out there meant to help people? This is the context. Now you're somebody like Mr. Olcott here, my friend, my mentor. You have somebody like him who gets ignored, and then everybody's shocked that he has PTSD? Really? Yeah, you're damn right I'm angry. Can I relate to this? The answer is yeah, and I've shared this story. I'm not allowed to go into details, but it was obvious to me that the Centers for Disease Control didn't know what the hell they were doing with an emergency in starting October 19th, 2001. Right? I remember it because it was my parents' anniversary, and I missed the party to go and help manage for NBC and CBS. It was obvious for me. So where does my story go after this? Jeff succumbed to this. And rest in peace, Jeff. And I'm sorry if I upset anybody out there, but it's one of those things we're doing this. Now, I go in after that, after the whole thing goes, was actively involved in politics, spoke to politicians at the highest levels, candidates, ran for office, 9th district. One of the campaign topics. I didn't run on the campaign, but it was talked about. We're not prepared for any of this stuff. We're not prepared for a pandemic. We're not prepared. We even had a vaccine plant built over in Swiftwater, Pennsylvania, and they just built another one fairly recently, Sanofi. Pasteur, then it's Sanofi Aventis, I think, one of those. I don't know what the name, current name is, right? Preparing for a pandemic that never came, flu pandemic, because we're going to be prepared. And we had sort of little tiny crises through here. I was on the phone with Mike Gallagher on the talk radio show host in 2010 discussing this. They're not prepared for this. What happened? They dropped the funding for all of this stuff in 2010. They, meaning the government, all the emergency preparedness, because we got a new administration in. We want to try to distance ourselves from the old administration. So none of this shit matters. So we were going through an economic crisis in 2008. Yeah, this is a little bit of a history lesson here. So they go and they ignore all of this stuff. Again. Right? Then we have little crises in there. Superstorm Sandy. We have a Hurricane Katrina. I believe that was 2005. That was thrown in. I'm jumping around a little bit. And all this, where things are obvious that we were not prepared for disasters. That we needed some kind of reform. Fast forward, 2019, September. Client calls me and says, Jimmy, we're having problems. And this is September. We can't get PPE. I said, what are you talking about? He says, Jimmy, you don't understand. We're having problems finding respirators, specifically P100 cartridges and combo cartridges and half-face respirators. And we were forced to buy full-face respirators because the supplier said all this stuff is starting to sell out. Oh, crap. Sure enough, everything started to disappear off the shelves. It was the PPE. Think back. 2020 comes around, and we have full-blown COVID here, right? And there was all... they tried to pull the same crap as they did on September 11th. There's not a problem here. Look at us. Everything's so wonderful. Everything's so good. We're going to go down, right? You see Nancy Pelosi and friends down in Chinatown, right? No, you talk about ridiculous. They want to show that China's okay, and we're going to go to Chinatown and go and walk on the streets. Everything's fine. Look, nice press operator. No problems. To a city where not even 20 years beforehand, heard the air is good and everything else. You want to add insult to injury there. We forget about all that stuff. Then we get this memo on March the 25th, 2020. Let me take a quick break here. Get a drink of water. Hang on.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars. With your host, Jim Pozel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Yeah, we're facing harsh reality tonight. Because we're going to link all this stuff together. Right? So what do we talk about? We talked about Jeff Olcott. We talked about the anthrax cleanups. We talked about 9/11, the big one. Now we're on to COVID. right? And all these little other disasters all through here, Katrina and everything. Now we're on to COVID. So in case you didn't hear, Andrew Cuomo, the former governor of New York, who apparently doesn't have a friend in Congress, is being, questioned, and that was negotiated and everything else. So it comes down to this. We have a program way back in the beginning of our show, way back, March 2021, called On Gaslighting. Go look up the program. All right. Here you go. This is the memo. March 25th, 2020. Two nursing home administrators, directors of nursing and hospital discharge letters. Let's see if the audio will get screwed up. I'll share this image right now. Hang on. Here, we're going to share it right here. Oh, okay. Doesn't sound like the audio is fouled up. Nursing home administrators, directors of nursing and hospital discharge planners from the New York State Department of Health. Advisory, hospital discharges and admissions to nursing homes. Please distribute immediately to nursing home administrators, directors of nursing, directors of social work, hospital discharge planners. Okay, great. COVID-19 has been detected in multiple communities throughout New York State. There is an urgent need to expand hospital capacity in New York State to be able to meet the demand for patients with COVID-19 requiring acute care. As a result, this directive is being issued to clarify expectations of nursing homes receiving residents returning from hospitalizations for nursing homes accepting new admissions. Hospital discharge planning staff and nursing homes should carefully review this guidance. I think that this is going to be yanked off the website tonight after this. All right. Directly involved in resident admission transfer. Okay, great. During this global health emergency, all nursing homes must comply with the expedited receipt of residents returning from hospitals to nursing homes. Residents are deemed appropriate for return to a nursing home upon a determination by the hospital physician or designee that the resident is medically stable. Now, we talked about this memo. What the hell does medically stable mean? It could mean anything. They gave themselves wiggle room here. Medically stable. What the hell does that mean? Hospital discharge planners must confirm to the NH by telephone that the resident is medically stable for discharge. So let's get this straight. You don't have enough hospital beds. You have sick people. All right? You have sick people. So where is the incentive? Is to get, and I'm not even going to get into the financial incentives that's being investigated also. The incentive is to get the person out of the hospital so somebody else can come into the hospital. Right? That's basically what it is. That's the context. Right? So that now they're medically stable. That doesn't mean they're not contagious. That does not mean that they're cured. That does not mean that they got better. That doesn't mean that they're conscious either. Just means that they're stable. They're not getting better. They're not getting worse. And then you're going to put this person into a nursing home where there is presumably no COVID or potentially a limited risk of COVID, blah, blah, blah. By the way, just to let you know, nursing homes are still dealing with this, and I can't talk about it. We'll just say. Because we have another COVID outbreak in here. Right? No resident shall be denied readmission or admission to the nursing home solely based on a confirmed or suspected diagnosis of COVID-19. Underlined. Right? Underlined here. Nursing homes are prohibited from requiring a hospitalized resident who is determined medically stable to be tested for COVID-19 prior to admission or readmission. And it goes on and on and on. spread talking about PPE and blah, 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 blah. According to powers that be, this does not exist. This memo does not exist. Because this does not say that they have to accept people after it says no resident shall be denied readmission or admission to the NIH based solely on a confirmed or suspected diagnosis of COVID-19. Sounds like me to me. Now you're in the nursing home. And remember, New York Board of Health suing a lot of people at this point, right? A lot of investigations of workplaces. Talked about Amazon, Staten Island, and another Amazon facility, 120 at the time, I don't know, I haven't kept up, $125 million in lawsuits and fines. OSHA, had hundreds and hundreds of problems with respiratory protection. Everyone's scared shitless here. Am I going to get sued? What do I do? So they come out with this, and they have the... They have the intestinal fortitude and the gonads to tell us that this doesn't exist, that they never said that. What was the result? And on top of that, just like with the Uniform Crime Victim Reporting Survey that was talked about lately in the news the last 2 weeks, everything's self-reported. And crime is looking good, but the cities that are reporting stuff, that things are getting better, change their reporting criteria. And they change what's a crime and what they're going to prosecute. So therefore, crime is getting better because there's fewer prosecutions. And they're classifying things different, all self-serving. Purely self-serving, but crime is getting better. Again, and they tried this for the administration. Well, allegedly, this is what they're being accused of. They're accused of concealing the deaths of 4,100 people in nursing homes. So it doesn't look so bad. Total of today, they estimate 17,000 plus people dead in nursing homes. All right. By the way, you think that this has an impact in my family? I had a cousin in a nursing home. Had massive health issues before COVID. She got COVID in nursing home and succumbed to it in January of this year. Complications from COVID. All right? By the way, my father was one of the first people in New Jersey to get COVID from a medical facility. Thankfully, he recovered. He died 2022. Got COVID January 2020 before there was any testing or anything widely available. So, we're going to circle around. Put this all together. What's the one common thread in all of this? Come on. We talked about it. I released a video on this earlier. We released a video on this earlier this week on the Cliffwood Beach. And that was another one, Cliffwood Beach, New Jersey, Morgan Serville. Sovereign immunity. Nobody's in charge and no one's responsible for anything. Not responsible. You can bet your rear end that if the emergency managers who knew that this was going into from a rescue to a recovery situation on the weekend after September 11th, if they knew that their ass would be thrown in jail or there would be criminal penalties, I think that they would act differently. If we had a more aggressive accountability system on this whole World Trade Center cleanup, and maybe, and I understand pain for pain, we have systems, we have human organizational performance. I get it. Believe me, I get it better than most people. I get it. But maybe if we could just say, hey, let's try to look into this, like Tom Keene on the 9/11 Commission, Governor Tom Keene from New Jersey, who I met, very nice guy. Had he been a little bit more forceful on this, and that commission been like, well, why did we make these decisions? I mean, if they publicized them and not buried in a 585-page report, had they gone that, maybe things would have been better. Years later, to her credit, Christine Todd Whitman issued an apology. To her credit with this. I'll give that to her. She issued an apology on this. But maybe if she was held accountable, maybe the emergency managers with Katrina, had they been, and the local people, had they said, look, we made a mistake, we've done this, blah, 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 held a little bit accountable, maybe this might not have happened. Maybe in 2010, when the budget was approved, and they stopped with their masks, right, and all the other emergency supplies, so when we really needed them during COVID, everything was expired. Maybe if they were held a little bit accountable, people who made those decisions, who voted for that, maybe they would have, we wouldn't have had leading on to more disasters, Superstorm Sandy in 2012, that way that was managing the problems. And maybe if we would have fixed those problems, maybe, okay, we don't hold people accountable. But we can say, damn it, we're going to fix these problems so we don't, this doesn't happen again. Maybe that would have been a great thing. Maybe, no, people, I tried. People ignored me. And that's on my conscience. I have to live with that, with all this stuff over the years. That's why we have the show here, Safety Wars, so we can go into this. And perhaps we wouldn't have had we known, there was a system in place to scrutinize these decisions and everything else, and maybe if they would have listened to people like me, this might not have happened. With COVID-19, we would have been able to manage this better with this rather than everybody trying to get the glory. Perhaps we would not have had 1.2 million deaths in the United States alone, and we do know that that is underestimated by a lot at this point because the stuff's not being reported like it was. We have, number one. Number two is that we have better ways of managing these things, and we have vaccinations regardless of your thing, and then worldwide 7 million people. But this is an ongoing theme. No accountability, no one in charge, going throughout this whole thing. All right, this is what's going on and on and on and on here. And there are no angels, there are no saints in this whole situation with emergency management. Now, what could you do? I'm going to be making this one of our signature programs. I'm going to edit this. I want you to go out there and share it. Share it with your congressman or congresswoman. Share it with your senator. Share it with your emergency managers. Share it with your coworkers. Share it with your safety professionals. If you're a safety professional, share it in your organization. This is the price of being ignored by us, of us being ignored in our situations like this. What could we do about it? I can think of two things right off the bat. Number one, we have to recognize the problem. We have to recognize the barriers that are working against us, our barriers. We have tomorrow or in the next few days, we're going to do pushback faced by safety professionals. And we're also going to do introduction to leadership. If we can become better leaders, we can start to push back on this in a positive way. If we could then go and recognize some of the things that we have to face, then we can better prepare. Third thing, start to integrate human and organizational performance in your organizations. Because right now, we have every project that I go on to, and I have to audit and I have to interact with people, they actually state how much the safety people are hated or the negative experiences they've had with safety people. Your influence, you got to learn to influence people in a positive way. We need to become leaders in our society. We need to become leaders in our workplaces. We need to get along with people. And the biggest issue that we have is that we have to have backbone. Now, if you're in the Pomona, New York area, on October 25th, the American Society of Safety Professionals is having their professional development conference right up the road here. I will be presenting there along with some other folks. I will be talking about introduction to leadership, and there's going to be a presentation on mental health and suicide there. It's planned right now on this. Check back at safetywords.com on this program. We'll share it. If you're a member of the ASSP, Lower Hudson Valley, we're right up here. Great event. I've been going to it for years. We'll talk more about this then. But there is a price for us being ignored. We got to work on it, guys and gals. People, we got to work on it. All right? And that's what I have. 41 minutes. That was a lot shorter than I thought. And we're going to go to commercial break.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
Hey there, safety professionals. Welcome to another episode of Safety Wars on Safety FM, hosted by Jim Posel, and today we're diving into what it really means to be on the front lines of the safety war. So, let's start with the basics. Safety is not just a set of rules or regulations. It's a culture, a mindset, a way of life. When we talk about safety, we're not just protecting workers from harm. We're building an environment where everyone can thrive. It's about going home safe and sound to our families every single day. Now, I know it sounds like a heavy responsibility, but that's why we're here. To make sure everyone understands the importance of safety and knows how to implement it effectively. Whether you're a seasoned safety professional or just starting out, there's always something new to learn. Let's talk about some key strategies. First up, communication. It's critical to ensure that everyone on the team is on the same page. Regular safety meetings, clear signage, and open dialogue can prevent a lot of accidents before they even happen. Next, let's focus on training. Proper training equips your team with the knowledge and skills they need to stay safe. Remember, it's not just about ticking a box. It's about making sure every worker understands the why behind each safety protocol. This understanding fosters a culture of safety where everyone looks out for one another. Of course, we can't forget about technology. From wearable safety devices to advanced monitoring systems, technology is revolutionizing how we approach safety. Embrace it. Use these tools to enhance your safety programs and keep your team protected. But let's not get too comfortable. Safety is an ongoing battle. New risks and challenges emerge all the time. Stay vigilant, stay informed, and never stop striving for a safer workplace. So, what's the takeaway? Safety is everyone's responsibility. It's about creating a culture where safety is ingrained in everything we do. As safety professionals, it's our job to lead by example and inspire our teams to commit to a safer future. Thanks for tuning into Safety Wars on Safety FM. Stay safe out there, and remember, every day is a new opportunity to make a difference. Catch you on the next episode.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Yes, Jessica, I am your father. Now, that might have been way over the top for some of you folks out there, but, you know, it is what it is here. All right, so yesterday I read a lot of things, and I've seen this on four different websites here, some of them political with this, or issue-oriented, I should say, NGOs. This was, like, the most freaky thing, and so let's hear. Fracking company with 2,000-plus environmental violations selected for federal environmental justice funding. A Pennsylvania-based fracking company is the subject of controversy after one of its projects was listed as an environmental justice initiative under a federal government program from the U.S. By the U.S. Department of Energy. An environmental monitoring project conducted by a certain company, a natural gas company headquartered in Pennsylvania, was included on a list of Justice 40 efforts related to the federally funded Appalachian Hydrogen Hub. All right? Hydrogen Hub. Hold on. Okay. The hub is a network of infrastructure that will create hydrogen for energy use. It's part of a nationwide initiative to advance hydrogen production with the goal of decreasing climate warming carbon emissions in the U.S. Justice 40 is a Biden administration initiative that directs 40% of overall benefits of certain federal programs to environmental justice communities, which are low income and overburdened by pollution. The inclusion of the company's project, dubbed the Racial Transparency Program by the company, suggests the company is slated to receive some of the $30 million in public funds allocated to the region's Hydrogen Hub project. Also included on that list is a natural gas producer, an oil and gas pipeline, etc., etc., etc. The company says that 9 months into the project, preliminary air monitoring results indicate that natural gas development done on these projects is safe and inherently good for the communities where we operate. But the company has a history of environmental violations and criminal charges for misreporting its own air emissions. CNX has wrapped up more than 2,000. Oh, sorry about that. The company reportedly has, and this is alleged, I don't know if this is true or not, but this is what's in the article, more than 2,000 environmental violations by the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection for the last 20 years at the more than 500 oil and gas wells that operates in Pennsylvania. The company also pleaded no contest to criminal charges for misreporting air pollution levels and violating the state's Air Pollution Control Act. Really? I don't know, it goes on and on and on and on and on. And what's my comment on this? Again, this is something that, and I've been on this. You see these things, you get, community awards. One of the best ones was a company I know got a diversity, equity, and inclusion award. And when I worked with a company, that they were like the last company in the world you would ever expect to get it. I mean, they're getting an award for this from the government in diversity, equity, and inclusion and high accolades. They had a KKK guy in charge of the place. Really? What the hell are we doing out there? I don't know. Aye, 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 aye. All right. Yes. That is, again, I have background music. I invested a little bit, and we got all different types of stuff here, right? So that's all royalty-free. That's open. No, we don't. We have royalty-free stuff here. Otherwise, I'm going to get yelled at by Jay Allen. All right. The U.S. Department of Labor announces $1.4 million in grants to prevent and respond to workplace gender-based violence and harassment. Let me do a share screen here. Hold on. A lot of the people view this program on their phone, and let's just... Right, here we go. The U.S. Department of Labor today announced the award of $1.4 million in funding to support efforts by four community organizations to prevent and respond to gender-based violence and harassment against undeserved and marginalized women workers. Okay. Administered by the Department's Women's Bureau and the Employment and Training Administration, the Fostering Access Rights for and Equity Grants will help survivors and women at high risk for violence and harassment in the workplace. The Biden-Harris administration is changing lives by creating, growing, and supporting good jobs where workers are safe, respected, and treated fairly. We can only do that by eliminating gender-based violence and harassment in the world of work. The Fostering Access, Rights, and Equity grants announced today represent an important investment toward that goal, said Acting Secretary Julie Hsu. The FAIR grant program helps women workers to know their rights, create tools to prevent and address gender-based violence and harassment, and by doing so, empower workers and advance gender equity. The FAIR grant program supports community organizations that do this sort of thing, gender-based violence and harassment. Good. I guess that's a great thing, you know? Basically education. Develop programs that mitigate risks that prevent gender-based violence and harassment and connect working women with services, benefits, legal assistance, and facilitate and encourage working women survivors to become focal points in their communities. Okay, great thing. Federal Appeals Court upholds decision that a company wrongfully exempted inside sales representatives from overtime pay. After an investigation by the U.S. Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division, the department's Office of the Solicitor filed a suit in July 2020 against FW Web Company, a wholesale distributor of plumbing, heating, and cooling, and other products in the U.S. District Court for the District of Massachusetts. The department alleged, among other things, that Web violated the Fair Labor Standards Act. Now, basically, you've got to make darn sure that you keep adequate and accurate records of hours worked. In June 2023, the district court granted summary judgment in favor of the department on the exemption issue, as well as the department's overtime and record-keeping claims. But basically, there is a... This is one point of view. I read an article on this case from the other point of view. The company felt that they were... My understanding was that the company felt that they're giving bonuses here for this, that they were giving bonuses that should make up for this. And, you know, there's a certain threshold with this. I don't know if that's, this is what the courts came out with. Here we go. And we have, what do we have? 5 minutes left. Let's see. We'll do one more story here. We'll cover this in depth tomorrow, this next story. But we'll just read the press release here. This is going to be maybe not tomorrow, maybe next week. For whatever reason, they are not releasing so many press releases. I wonder why that is, at least on this stuff. Federal safety inspection finds SunPrayer, a contractor, failed to protect workers from potentially deadly hazards at home sites. A suburban Madison contractor with a history of federal safety failures, including violations that led to employees' fatal injuries in 2022, has again been found exposing workers to the construction industry's most deadly hazard, falls from elevation. Something like 800 people a year die from that situation, give or take. The company received citations for one willful, two repeated, and five serious violations and proposed $144,000 plus in penalties. So basically, all revolved around fall protection issues here. The willful, now, I'm going to say this. We talked a lot about controversial things today. Everyone's innocent till proven guilty. And because we have the concept of sovereign immunity, they'll never see a, now this stuff will never be litigated or anything else here. Right? So, this is what, you know, again, they're public figures. You can say certain things about public figures that you can't say about other things, right, without being, right? I've met several of these people. They're very nice people. But what we need is something where, right, we hold the government to the same standard that we're held to as professionals. That's all I'm saying. They, right? So everyone's innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. All of these fines and all these penalties and everything else are just that. They're proposed penalties. They get litigated, negotiated, vacated, and everything else with this. So I want to say thank you for the indulgence tonight with this. And we will see you back with all this stuff. And good night, everybody. We're right at about 8:56. We're going to go right to our outro and then some patriotic music as also. People like the patriotic music at the end of the program.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.